If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Welcome, everybody, to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, our opportunity to talk about the world of theater and the arts going on in and around Chicagoland. And I recently saw Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat playing at the Marriott Lincolnshire. And I got to tell you, look, I've seen the show a million times. And so I thought, well, I do love it. I do enjoy it. So let's see it again. But I didn't expect to be as wowed as I was from this experience. It just was probably the best rendition of this show that I have seen. And I said, we need to find out why. So the reason we will find out why is because I will be joined by two of the lead cast members and the director. And yeah, you see that other guy who's on your screen? That is Brent Mulvey. He is the director of food and beverage for Marriott. Why would he be here? You're going to find out in a little bit because there's a special reason. But for now, let me introduce you to the stars of the show. Caitlin Davis, who you all saw, I hope you saw her in Beautiful, where I believe there was a Jeff Award for you there, right, Caitlin? Well-deserved, where you became Carol King in just an amazing performance. But also you've done Phantom. Your voice, you know, this show gives you the opportunity to do a little of that operatic thing that comes up, and that was the Phantom coming out for me from you. Yeah. But you play the narrator in here. Do people call you narrator just around the dressing room and stuff?
That's a good point. We did try in rehearsal to come up with a name for me for a second, but we never really settled on one. So if you've got any suggestions.
Thelma Lou is where my mind's going.
Thelma Lou. Okay, great. Great.
And Devin DeSantis, you play Joseph, although it's arguable whether you're Joseph at the beginning. Are you Joseph from beginning to end?
I mean, it is arguable. I like to think I'm more just myself at the beginning. But yes, it is Joseph. I think we're Joseph the whole time.
Well, you're daddy. You're daddy.
I'm daddy. Daddy Joseph.
And you, of course, you're not a newcomer to Marriott. You've been there in Honeymoon in Vegas and Godspell. You've been at the Goodman. I saw you in Matchbox Magic Flute where you got to work. Also, you have this thing about like cool looking outfits.
Oh, well, who doesn't love a cool looking outfit? This is why I do theater, for the costumes.
Yeah. And and working with my friend Billy over there in that show. So that was really wonderful. Anyway, you do great stuff. And Amber Mack, I don't know whether you cast these people or said, let's just bring them in. I don't know. But what phenomenal directing you've done of this show. Jeff nominee, of course, for your work at the Marriott. But you've done Buddy, Sound of Music, Beauty and the Beast, work at Paramount. You're all over the place. I think one of the great directors in the city. And I'm glad you could join us.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I convinced these fools to come play with me and clown around.
and it is just that. And Brent Mulvey, again, we're going to get to you. You're here because there's some special food things going on that tie to this show. But we're going to do that. But let's talk a little bit about the show. And actually, I'm going to, Amber, come to you because when you have, wait, no, I have a trivia question. If anybody knows this, Amber might be the one who would. Maybe you all do, maybe none of you, I don't know. But if any of you know this immediately, don't answer it, okay? Do any of you know how old Andrew Lloyd Webber was when he wrote this show, when he wrote Joseph?
I think 17 or 18.
Caitlin, what do you think?
I think around that age. So he was young.
Devin?
Yeah, I agree, because I think it was a school project that he wrote this for. So I think it was either high school or college, somewhere around there.
Let's go to the non-theater guy, since you're here. Brent, how old do you want to make Andrew Lloyd Webber the great?
I thought he was in his 20s, because I thought the school project was the short that he expanded on.
Oh, good job on
Brent.
That.
Wow.
We are going to cast you as Benjamin. I think we're going to at least bring you in as something into this show. But actually, 17 is the answer. I actually just recently did an interview with some other folks tied to this show. They did not know. They put him in his 30s and late 20s and all that. What an incredible work to do when you are 17 years old. And it did start as a short thing, Brent. So you are right. So, okay, kudos to all of you for knowing that. I guess you probably should. But so, Amber, when you have something that was written back in the 70s when he did this, and here we are in 2025, was the first challenge to you when you were asked perhaps to direct it to sort of say, so what is different about doing this show now? Are we about to see the same Joseph we've been watching for all these years?
That was exactly what, the producers of the Marriott, when they asked me, I said, okay, well, what does Joseph look like, through the lens of a 2025 audience member? And you know, there's so much nostalgia that's wrapped up in Joseph. There's so much people know it, they've seen it, they've been in it in high school. I mean, we went around the cast and we're like, who has a relationship with the show? You know, I played Naphtali when I was in high school. My brother played Pharaoh. Like, you know, so much nostalgia. But it was like going back and watching it again, I was like, oh, we're in a different world, in a different state. And the thing that is so contagious about it is I think there's so much youthfulness that audiences experienced. A lot of them, a lot of people experienced it as children seeing the show for the first time, you know, and it was like, how do we continue to capture that and pass it to the next generation? So that was definitely the first question. How do we present it to a 2025 audience?
And I'm going to bring up in a bit the way I think there were a couple of things that went on there that, again, I cover politics and law in the world of WGN TV. So there were a few things that went on there that triggered that for me. And I'm going to ask you about, we're not going to talk about politics here, but I'm going to ask you about whether I'm off base in what it is I thought I might have been seeing. So Caitlin, of course, in Beautiful, you create a character we all knew. And we talked about that when we did that interview. You know, everybody knows who Carole King is. Maybe they've seen her live. I don't know. But you know, you have this real person that you had to deal with. This is a really interesting role because, yes, your mom for a little, I think, your mom there married to Devin for a little while. But you become a narrator. Is that a character challenge for you? Because you have to be present, yet you're the storyteller. You're not like Joseph's wife in the show, right? I mean, is that question making sense? How do you adapt to that character and make that character come alive, who's really a storyteller?
That's so intuitive of you to ask that, because it actually was a huge challenge. I think Amber and I talked about a lot in rehearsal. I was like, oh, I think I'm really desperate for some energy to play off of, but I'm sort of separate from everything. And so I did have sort of a lift of finding the energy within myself to create what was happening. So there was definitely a learning curve at the beginning. And I think even, I mean, I had played Carole for a long time. And what you're saying is that was a real person. I had a lot to pull from. I had, you know, a whole biography to read and like a lot of detail there. So, and something about Carole is that she's a very reluctant star. And so being the narrator, I come out and it's like from the jump, it's just like me telling and creating this story. And so it definitely, I had a bit of a learning curve, but it was good. Amber helped me come out of my shell a bit and create this whole thing. And we do have moments where I get to, you know, play with Devin, and I have our young performers with me, and sometimes I'll notice them reacting a certain way to the story, and that does help me like know which pieces to heighten and things like that. But you're absolutely right. There was definitely a challenge there in creating this shape of this person who's really just sort of relaying information to the audience. So yeah, it took a second.
That's why we gave you the name Thelma Lou.
Yes, exactly. Thelma Lou was hard to find, but now she feels very ingrained in me.
Exactly. And I'm sorry, I make that reference. I'm showing my age. Does anybody even know what I'm referencing when I do that?
Thelma makes me think of Thelma and Louise, but I don't know if that's what you're
referring. No, it's actually a reference to the old Andy Griffith show. Thelma Lou was Barney's girlfriend. Well, why my mind went there, I do not know.
I did watch a lot of Nick at Night in my life, but not Andy Griffith.
Okay, well, you can still see it on the Wii. It's still on all the time. And so, Devin, you did avoid the Donny Osmond must appear mostly clothesless provision in your contract. But I'm curious as to how, look, Donnie, he played that here for about 30,000 years and was critical. But I don't know. Do you find that was a long time ago? I interviewed Donnie during that time. And does that even matter to you that Donnie did this to you? Did you look to that presentation at all? Or is it like we're in a different day?
Well, of course it matters, because I can't go a day without doing the show without somebody coming up to me and saying, like, we loved Donnie so much. And you did us proud, you know, whatever they have to say about it. We all have Donny Osmond. And I think that Donny Osmond is synonymous with Joseph. You can't get around it.
Nor can he.
So of course I, you know, and I've known and loved it for a long time too. So of course I have that in my head, but like any project, I do my best to understand where it came from, but I want to approach it as if I'm reading it for the first time. And I want to honor the material that we're doing and give my own, whatever I feel, whatever's coming out for me, I want to do as best I can to do that, so that people aren't saying, oh, well, that's just exactly what Donnie did, or vice versa. You know, like I want to honor him, but I absolutely want to do my own thing. So that's what I tried to do.
And I guess, you know what, you get to do both of those things for two reasons. Number one, Donnie was a long time ago. So yes, people who are in their, I don't know, 50s, 60s, whatever, or people like me who just saw that show a lot. Yes, we might make that comparison or make that comment. Or by the way, he's also on the DVD of the video. So if you go to, or Broadway HD, whatever, however you watch old Broadway shows, you're going to see Donnie. But at the same time, it is such a newer audience and a brand new audience that even if they've seen the show somewhere, Donnie may not be the way they saw it. And I do want to, Amber, The music of this show and the voices, you guys, your voices, but obviously of the whole cast, just amazing, amazing work in the show. Here's where I'm going to test my memory, because I've seen the show a million times, but it's also been a while. Amber, am I right? And I maybe have a musical director here or something as well, but there are times that I feel like these cast members are getting to do something that maybe wasn't in the original score with certain notes and certain things. Am I hearing that or am I wrong?
I mean, I think definitely on different solos, there's
on solos.
Yeah, definitely a little liberty that's taken, you know, to personalize it. You know, our Pharaoh, Lorenzo Rush, he has his own take. I mean, everyone knows it sort of as an Elvis impersonator. Lorenzo's his own take on it. And yeah. So like his riffs and things are in there. Yeah, we even with Ryan, our music director, you know, he definitely helped the orchestrations support some of, you know, he reduces the orchestrations down. And so he used them to support some of that. You know, Go, Go, Go Joseph was reimagined completely into, like, instead of a go-go dance, it's into a pep rally. And so we had some fun, you know, with changing that up a little bit. I think Benjamin.
And is that you? Is that your doing?
That is my doing. you know, when I listen to it, I have an 8-year-old daughter and, you know, really trying to imagine the show that in the concept that we frame this is, you know, what would a child's imagination lead them to? What do these songs mean in a child's imagination when I listen to them? And I just thought, I don't know, my daughter would hear the song and literally hear it as a pep rally, you know, as a cheering Joseph on to the next part, you know, that we don't give up. When you look at it within the story, it's like he's down on his luck and he's wanting to give up. And it's like, no, you're going to go places. And it feels like this awesome pep rally. So yeah, I just reimagined the whole thing for, like I said, really my daughter was a lot, my own kids were a lot of the inspiration for that whole framing.
And that's part of what I meant. I guess I'm talking about the difference in music, but I'm seeing the difference in some of those directorial decisions as well, because it's not, you know, the show when it first came out or whatever, it's sort of 100% biblical in its look and what was going on. And now I love the fact that there's some different things that go on with it. Caitlin, am I right from the original score? Because, I mean, you and Devin, both your voices are so amazing that am I hearing things that maybe weren't in the original score that just let you be Caitlin?
Oh, yeah. I'm going a little wild in Pharaoh's story. But I think, you know, what's interesting is... like for when it was written, I think the notes in the score were like the most exciting part of the female presenting voice. And the way that the musical theater canon has changed, I've sort of clicked it up a bit for what is the most exciting part of maybe my voice personally, but also where some more contemporary musicals now sit. I think a lot of things have, you know, the gears have been clicked up for like belting and all that stuff. So I wanted to make it the intention of the moment versus exactly what was on the page. And I think that's sort of working, hopefully. But
it is. And in fact, what you're noting, I think, is one of the things I was picking up on. This wasn't the Joseph of the 70s, right? Mm-hmm. So when you would see this show over the decades, there was the standard show that you would see. And it was well done and it's memorable. And the music is, you know, earwig stuff. But I was hearing something that seemed like it was like modernized a bit. It was there for the more current Broadway audience. So let me ask you, and I'm coming to you in a second, Devin, with similar questions. But Caitlin, is it you're doing? Are you working with Amber? I mean, are you just going, I'm doing it because I know how to, or are you ask permission? Amber, I'd like to do some things here.
I think it's a little bit of both. And I think as the rehearsal process is going on and we were staging things, I could feel what would maybe work or not work. I had even little things that I used to do practicing it on my own where then we were on the stage and maybe it was a whole group number. And I was like, oh, I need to keep it exactly what the score is so that it's clear in that moment or things like that. So it did sort of morph as we went. I did come in with my own ideas of how to do Pharaoh's story, but I did do them in my audition. So I figured those were already approved.
Right. Better to ask forgiveness than permission.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to tell Caitlin how to do that.
And
nor Devin, should we.
Devin, did you notice that last Saturday night you actually were singing Close Every Door to a duet with me in the audience?
Yes, I heard that. It was nice.
That song, you get some great numbers, of course, but Close Every Door. I mean, if I were to ask you what your favorite song is, I'm guessing you'd go there, because that just lets Joseph have such incredible moments. And there too, vocally, you just get to explode on that number. Or am I wrong and you hate the song?
No, I love it. I absolutely love it. No, and it, yeah, you're stuck in a teeny box of lights in the middle of the stage with no props and nobody else to talk to. And you just get to, I get to live and exist up there. And it's one of my absolute favorite things to do. And yeah, it's, you know, just one more note on sort of why we do what we get to do, take our own little liberties with it. In my mind too, a song like Close Every Door, I mean, again, I want to honor it. I don't want to mess it up or anything like that, but it is kind of a repetitive song. It's a verse after a verse after a verse. And the way it's written is very even. It's just like eighth notes. And I think,
yeah, but you get key changes in there.
You get a key change, but I just think if you're really emotionally connected to this song and you're really saying the words, I think it just starts to go beyond. It starts to blossom beyond kind of just the straight notes that are on that page. And that's another question that people always ask. Oh, Donnie, you're going to do the Donny Osmond options? You're going to do exactly? And I was like, I might, but I want to do what I want to do. I want to do what's coming from inside of me, because that's what we are. Ultimately, we're vocalists. We're performers. That's how we create. That's our art. So,
well, Donnie didn't appreciate my duet, so I appreciate you acknowledging that it added something.
Beautiful.
To me.
It was beautiful.
Let me just put that out there. Hey, before the evening starts, and before you go, get ready, Brent, and before we go and watch this amazing show, if you are like, I don't know if I can say most people, but because I know, but I always go to Three Embers Restaurant. It's one of a couple of restaurants that are available. Do you guys, by the way, do you ever eat at Three Embers? Like, is that part of what you do on any nights?
We go, yeah, they've got several restaurants there, Wright's and yeah. Three Embers, and everyone, yeah. I will go take advantage of the good food there. It's delicious.
So. Yeah, okay. So, oh, good. That was a good line, Devin.
You're welcome.
So Three Embers. So Brent, I always eat at Three Embers because that's more of the steakhouse kind of location. Wright's, which Devin just mentioned, is more kind of a more casual type place. But there's something new, because I've never brought you on before, even though I've done other Marriott show interviews. There's something new that is happening with Joseph. I assume the cast and Amber, you know this, right? There's something they're doing at Three Embers, which people need to know about. And I went to experience it because it is different. Tell everybody what it is and why'd you decide, or why was it decided that it should be done?
Well, we appreciate you coming out and checking it out and having me on for this. We are celebrating the resort and the theater's 50th anniversary. So in celebration of that, we are trying to tie the whole resort in and together. So we have started and transformed Three Embers into a pop-up restaurant we are calling Joseph's Dream Grill, and thematically tying the menu, the food, the decor in with the show. And we are planning to do that for the full run of shows for this season.
So for Joseph, for example, I started off, I have this pizza with like pulled pork on it or something, but it was, everything was sort of a Middle Eastern, makes sense, right? A Middle Eastern sort of flavor, the kind of pizza they might have made back in Joseph's day.
Certainly. And so, you know, a lot of the menu and even the decor draws from where the Bible was set, obviously, in the Middle East, kind of Northern Africa and that area. But we also had some fun tying it into the characters. The pizza you mentioned, we are calling it Pharaoh's Memphis-style barbecue pizza, and it has a nod to that Elvis impersonation. If you believe the lore, Elvis was the reason that barbecue pizza exists, because he kept going back to the pizzeria in Nashville and asking over and over again for this barbecue pizza, and it has obviously grown into being something that's recognizable, tying it a few other items in with Benjamin salad, kind of in a Jamaican theme. And then we also have a hoedown ribeye, tying in obviously to the song Hoedown in the musical as well.
Did you know the show before you created the menu?
So you called me not the theater guy earlier, but I actually do have a theater background, both on and off stage.
Well, yeah, to be honest, I apologize, because you know more than they did when it comes to when Andrew. Yeah, so actually you should be directing the show too. So all right,
sure.
But go ahead.
Well, I did do theater all through middle school and high school, both on and off stage. And this show I've probably seen more than any other musical in my life. So I do have the background with it and going into it as well. So this one's easy. The next four might be a little bit more of a challenge, but
Gotcha. Oh, see, we have a theater guy right on top of us. So you've seen this version. What do you think of the show here? Let's get a critique here.
It's fantastic. I have no notes.
Okay. Amber's happy to hear that. By the way, before I sort of leave the food thing, the next show up at the theater is Titanic. Yeah. Are we getting the last meal that was served on the Titanic? I mean, what? Where is this going?
So we're trying to go a couple different ways.
Enjoy that, dude. It's your last meal.
When we've talked to the culinary team, we've taken a couple different ways. There is, thankfully, a lot of historical information of the meals that were served on the ship, the menus and the different classes that we can pull off and recreate those menus from the ship, including the last meal that was served, that menu we did find. But also more broadly looking at traditional English dishes, because obviously setting sail from London and tying that in. And
it's iceberg always, lettuce.
I think we might steer away from that pun, but it's certainly available to us. It's really, though, still sticking to what Three Embers Core is and being fresh and seasonal and rotating. We've always rotated the menu 5 times a year based on the show schedule and based on what is seasonal and what's local and what's fresh. And we're able to still tie that in with our culinary team to link into the shows a little more directly now.
All right. I'm happy to advise. I mean, I've got things like putting tables on a tilt. I've got all sorts of ideas for you when it comes to doing that show.
We'll hire you as the designer.
And you should have some violinists come in who play us as we're leaving the restaurant.
We'll see if we can find one.
All right. And by the way, finally, I have one other suggestion, which is I actually collect history and stuff. So I actually have some things from the Titanic. I've got some of the original tiles and this item that was given to a woman who she died on the Titanic, but she gave it to a younger person who lived. And I had that. So you might want to have a little exhibit that might be interesting as well. All right.
That would be awesome.
That's the food. Caitlin and Devin, are you auditioning for Titanic?
No, it's plenty cast, but one of our mutual best friends is in it. So that's very exciting.
Okay, cool. By the way, Amber, on The Elvis by Lorenzo, and I've seen him, of course, at Black Ensemble Theater and all, some of the great stuff that he's done. My take on this Elvis was, and I mean this in a good way, he kind of de-Elvised. He was just a little de-Elvised. I've usually seen the role played like as Elvis. And here it's like I don't remember him having to wear glasses or anything. You let him be a little more Lorenzo. You kind of indicated that earlier, but I think I might be right about that.
Yeah, you know, he kind of took it back to different roots of people that influenced Elvis, you know, and his take. And I would say that he did one specific take, but as I watch him, he just kind of grabbed from a whole bunch of different rock and roll icons. And
you give him that freedom? Do you stand back as director?
No, yeah, I gave him that freedom, and we kind of talked. He came in with his audition, and he did his own. I encourage people to take their own take away from necessarily the Elvis, box that everyone knows. And when Lorenzo came in, he did his own version, and it was like, yes. And so then we just try to support what Lorenzo brought to the table to begin with, and then built from there.
So here's my political question. Again, I'm not taking you guys into politics, but it's the world I live in. I thought I heard a line in the show that I don't remember being in the show. There's a part of me that saw the Pharaoh maybe as a representative of current political atmospheres that we're in. And I thought I heard a line in which somebody, maybe it was the narrator, I'm not sure, but somebody, Caitlin's acknowledging, but somebody says something like, he's really right wing or something like that.
Am I right wing?
Am I right? That was not in the original show. And is that you guys stepping into are you sort of acknowledging that we live in 2025?
No. That's the original lyrics.
That is the original lyric?
Yep.
Yeah.
It never struck me back before when I heard
it. That's so amazing about art. That's what I love. Because we know patrons, we've experienced it in the past. They come, they think we put these things on it, like we're expressing our own opinions or trying to add. And it's like, y'all, it's history. We've seen this before. It's happened before. Things haven't changed. Yeah. We're not changing anything. It's just amazing how it resonates.
Do you get a lot of, do you have folks who talk to you afterwards and stuff? Do you have people who sort of wonder these kinds of questions? Like, were you doing this? And were you going political?
We get versions of that sometimes. Absolutely. I've heard stories though. I have friends who have experienced that, patrons writing letters or writing emails saying, please keep your politics out of the theater. It's like, we're actors. We are literally saying what's on the page. We can't, you know, we're just telling you the story. If that hits you that way, what an amazing thing. What an amazing thing that it hit you in such a way, because it is still so relevant.
Yeah. And Caitlin, it's your line. So do you, you must have people ask you about it then, as I just did.
I haven't had, so this is the first time I've been asked directly about it, but it is very interesting to me how it hits every audience a little bit differently. And I think it is very, it's very British and dry how I drop it and then immediately move on, I think. So I think sometimes it gets a little lost in the sauce, but when it really gets heard, like on our official press opening that we finally had after the first one, there was the snowstorm, it got like an applause break, and that has sort of made me feel a lot better about it. And I'm like, oh yes, okay, we're okay. We can find the humor in this moment. So it depends on the audience if they've even noticed it or if they have a response to it. So yeah, I have gotten a little more comfortable with it as the run has gone on.
And I guess, there's me bringing my background into it, right? I'm sensitive to it, so I'm going to hear it. Right. I don't react one way or the other than to acknowledge that that's what I think I've heard. Right. And by the way, you mentioned the press opening. I unfortunately was in Cleveland the night of the press opening. I couldn't be there. But Brent, also, you also gave the press an opportunity. So if anybody knows somebody in the press or in terms of writing reviews, you gave them an opportunity to experience the Joseph food evening.
Absolutely. We invited them all in for a pre-show reception and had hors d'oeuvres that were sampled and passed to sample the menu, as well as their specialty cocktail, and can get a chance to see and feel and taste everything that we're doing for the Dream Grill.
And can Caitlin, Devin, and Amber come in for free dinners this Friday night?
Of course.
Okay.
Oh,
great.
You're welcome.
We got it.
You're welcome.
Oh,
perfect.
Or hold on to it one more week when this show is airing and then just bring it with you and show Anna, my usual server, when I'm there. Amber, who is this show, do you think, directed to? Because I think, I don't know, I feel like when Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote it, and Brent gave us this in terms of, you know, where it was written, maybe he did have sort of a younger storytelling model in mind, but it does have appeal across the board. Is that just the magic of Andrew Lloyd Webber?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it really is multi-generational. I think, you know, like I said, everybody, we're introducing the younger audiences to it for the first time, but there's obviously a relationship with people that have seen it for decades. And so it has this broad appeal. I think also just the styles of music that Andrew Lloyd Webber explored in it, you know, it literally hits on a country or a rock and roll or a calypso, you know, there's literally something for everyone. And then that pop sensibility, it's fun. And his melodies that he writes are so catchy. They just endure and they live within you. I mean, I've stepped away from the show. They are still living in it, but I have stepped away and I still wake up in the middle of the night singing Go, 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 Joseph.
Yes. I do close every door.
Like, it doesn't stop. So
yeah. And by the way, one casting question. So here, our narrator, Joseph couple have a daughter in this show. That's what opens it. But I've also seen the show in previous incarnations, maybe even the Donnie version, where there's actually the narrator is a teacher and she has a group of young people. Is that a directorial decision or is it just a casting sort of a, you know, let's not worry about having 20 kids on the stage?
You know, the challenge within the Marriott is we're in the round, and to put a children's chorus, it would be difficult, and where we moved them around in sight lines, literally logistically. But it was also like, you know, I think the story being told to a child is an important part of how you experience the show. And so it was like, what is the solution in specifically for the Marriott, of how can we continue that idea and the intention behind it, but do it in our own version. And so that's where the mom and dad. And when I listened to it, when I was just driving in the car, and I was like, oh my gosh, it sounds like a bedtime story. It sounds like, you know, from the beginning, and it bookends and it comes back around in a way, you know. And you talk about, like, did we take liberties? Things that, you know, individual notes and stuff might have changed, but beyond that, it's just a different, you know, conception of what the show is and staging. Otherwise, nothing else. The lyrics, we cannot change. the Andrew Lloyd Webber estate and Tim Rice estate would get very mad at us. So, you know, those things are exactly how they are. And it's just us reimagining the idea of what the story looks like.
Yeah, except if Barbara Streisand wanted to change a lyric, she would call Stephen Sondheim and go, "I'm changing it." And he'd go, "I get it. You're Streisand. So let's just."
I would say, that's Streisand.
You know, and Caitlin, they always say as an actor, be careful when you perform with children or animals. Now, the one thing where Amber was good to you was, I'm all about animals. The kids I can take care, but give me an animal on the stage and I've lost it. Fortunately, that is not a real goat.
Yeah, not a real goat, but she does have a name, Simone. And then there's the littler goat, Simone Jr.
Even they get names and you don't have a name. Think about that.
I know. That's so true, actually. That's so true.
And Devin, you get to play with the fake goat too. I'm looking at it took me a little while. I'm going, is that goat real? I want to go play with the goat. get them off the stage. Give me the goat. But Devin, you also have to, just a little bit about your character. We're going to wrap up here in just a moment. But you know, Joseph, we haven't actually told the story. I guess I make this assumption that give us a quick version of the story, Devin. What is this show about? Let's do it at the end of the interview.
Old Testament Bible story about Jacob and his 12 sons. Joseph was his favorite son, and he made no bones about it. He let all of his other sons know that Joseph was his favorite, and his brothers didn't really like that. And he had these dreams of greatness, that maybe he was made for something greater than just being a farmer with all of his brothers. And so they decided, well, we got to get rid of this guy. So his brothers basically try and kill him and then end up selling him as a slave for some money. And that's sort of what sets him off on his journey to becoming sort of the second in command to Pharaoh. And then his brothers come on back in the end, and they're hungry and starving, and he helps them even though they sold him. That's basically the story.
Yeah. And it's a biblical story, so people can, if they haven't read it, it should be familiar. And by the way, as you were doing that in my head, I'm going, da, 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 da. Anyway, so we've got Caitlin's telling of that story as we go through it. But I do have one question for you, Devin, from a character perspective, and I did mean to ask this earlier, which is the relationship between Joseph and his brothers. Is it one in which he hates and learns to understand? Is he naive and learns to accept? What is his metamorphosis?
Well, here's something in the story. Amber and I talked a little bit about this, but in the actual story, Joseph is 6 years old when his brothers decide to sell him. And so in my mind, he was a kid. He was just living his life. And he was like, I'm having dreams about being great. And I don't. And my dad loves me. I don't know what, you know, and his brothers don't like it. I don't think he sees it any other way, except all of a sudden he's being thrown into this world that he doesn't understand. So I don't hate my brothers, not in this show. I love them very much. And all of a sudden I'm gone from my family and I have to figure out my life. So when they come back to me at the end, I love that we sort of tie it up and we end up all forgiving each other and loving each other. And, you know, that's the only way I could see it. I don't play it at all that I hate them or that there's this horrible thing.
And that's good to know. It's a positive note that we can wrap up. By the way, the medley that happens at the end, Amber, is that also part of the script, or because it's always done, is that in the script or is that something every director chooses to do?
No, the Megamix is part of the script. It's, you know, it's the bonus that is there. I guess it's not listed in the programs often, so maybe it seems like it's a surprise, but it's definitely in there, and it's that, you know, 9 minutes that the cast gets to get all the rest of their energy out.
Yeah, I love it. Well, first of all, thank you. This is the 50th anniversary season kicking off at Marriott, and Joseph is playing until March 30th. Not all that much time to see it, but a little time to get over and see it. Tickets are available at tickets.marriotttheater.com with theater spelled the proper British way, T-R-E. I always like when that one. T-E-R, sort of like you don't even get the business, right? And Brent knows that because he's a theater guy. So the tickets are at tickets.marriotttheater.com. What a great way to kick off the 50th season. With the show, with the meals tied in, fabulously directed. You guys, just true stars. And thank you for spending some time with me. I would go see that show every night if I could. It's just really, really wonderful. So continue to break legs. Brent, I look forward to having iceberg lettuce at the Titanic show when it opens up. I'm totally tied to that now. And
just for you.
Just for me. Right. Paul's here. Give him the iceberg. Anyway, thank you, everybody. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it. And letting our viewers and listeners know that this show, Behind the Curtain, is also going to be seen starting in early April on the WGN Plus app, where you can watch it on the weekends as it streams or anytime on demand, in addition to all the platforms you're currently watching it or have been watching it for the last few years. We're expanding to the WGN Plus world. So thank you all for joining me. Thanks for our listeners, viewers, for watching us. And I will see you all on stage. Go, 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 Joseph.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everybody. I appreciate your time. We're done. Brent, thank you for hanging through that. I'm sorry for saying you weren't a theater guy. I just you weren't here a theater guy. You also are an identical. I have a friend named Mike Lanero, and you like could be his twin. So it's like freaking me out. He also needs a job. So let me know if you have an opening. Devin, I know you have a kid. I'm curious, did your kid come see the show?
She did. She loved it. She also was a little disturbed when I got thrown into jail, but we pushed through it.
Does she at home? Does she go, Daddy, jail, Daddy, go to jail? Oh, wait, I'm saying like she's two. I don't know. How old is she?
No, she doesn't think about that part anymore. She just goes, go, Joseph.
Gotcha. Caitlin, do you have kids?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, when you do, bring them to the show. And Amber, you have an eight-year-old who I assume has also seen the show?
Yes, I have an eight-year-old and a three-year-old.
Love it.
And they both saw the show and loved it.
All right. I don't mean to knock you out of this, Brent. Any kids in your world that you brought to see the show?
Not yet.
Okay. My kids are in their 20s. Too cool for them. All right. Anyway, thanks, everybody. Break legs. I really appreciate your time. This is the group I asked for, and you all said yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks. Right.
Thank you,
Paul.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye-bye. Bye.